This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. I hesitate to call Sekou Sundiata a performance poet, just in case that brings to mind a lot of clichés. Sundiata's work is anything but clichéd. But he is part of a group of poets who are gaining a new following by presenting their words through exciting performances. Writing in the Village Voice, Greg Tate called Sundiata our fiercest poet on the subject of love in struggle. Sundiata's new theater piece, The Mystery of Love, is his second collaboration with jazz trombonist Craig Harris. It opens Friday night at the American Music Theater Festival in Philadelphia. Sundiata is the librettist and narrator. The story is about a triangle between three members of a band. Here's an excerpt.
They say there is a line between above and below.
They say there is a line between above and below.
A mystical border.
Between the visible and the invisible.
Between you and
a mystical
gods.
Border between you and the gods.
Somebody much wiser.
And the passage from one world to the next is quicker, faster than a change of mind. Somebody much wiser. Somebody much wiser than you or I once said that the truth will not be told by the battles you win or lose, but by the stories we believe in. Whoever said there was a light at the end of the tunnel was a liar. The darkness begins, the blackness takes us back. In between are the stories, the light, and the precious lies. I got a story, you got a story. My man Max, my man Shine, and my girl Sissy got a hell of a story. This is the house. This is the house and the home of hearsay. The poetic truth of all the available facts, otherwise known as the crossroads. From see to can't see, from talk to song, from drum to tongue. The events here described take place in the wilderness of North America. The names have not been changed to protect nobody. Whatever happens.
Sekou Sundiata is on the faculty of the New School for Social Research. He won a 1992 Bessie Award and was selected as a 1993 Sundance Institute Fellow to write a screenplay adaptation of his previous theater piece. I asked him what music does for him when he's performing his poetry.
It's the way I conceptualize my poetry from the very beginning, you know, in a very musical way. The roots for me of poetry comes from my first experience with language, which is through African American culture. I mean, I fell in love with language through daily speech. You know, the language I heard around me, the way it was used to include and exclude, the way it embraced, the way it chastised, the way, you know, the humor in it, all of that. You know, and the oral tradition as I encountered it at home, but also in the church. You know, we used to go to the Baptist church. And I like to go to church for the ritual, I mean, for the theater of it, you know. I was really captivated. I used to imitate the preachers, you know.
Where did you grow up? What neighborhood did you grow up in? What city?
I grew up in New York City. Spent a great deal of time in my family homeland in South Carolina. But I grew up in Harlem and East Harlem, or El Barrio.
One of the things, obviously, that got you about language was not only the preachers, but probably the way people insulted each other on the street, right? Which is a really wonderful use of language. Were you good at that? I mean, could you get by with language when you need? Could you protect yourself with language when you needed to?
Well,
did people look up to you because of your gift for language?
Well, I don't know about looking up. I do know that I very early on I could speak. You know, I knew I could express myself. Even before I really developed an interest in writing myself, I love to read, you know. But I knew I could talk, you know, and I also knew that I was a listener, you know. And even before being a talker, I'm a listener. All of those things I think are early influences on developing as a poet.
I'd like to ask you to do one of your poems for us.
Okay, I preface this by saying that this is a poem that I wrote really being influenced by some of my students several years ago who were really into hip-hop and rap music, etc., and were interested in writing poetry with that influence going on. So this is sort of a tribute to them, and it's called Blink Your Eyes. What is the mathematics? What is the mathematics of today? What can I say? I was on my way to see my woman, but the law said I was on my way through a red light, red light, red light, red light. It wasn't about no woman, it was about my ride. And if you saw my ride, you could dig that too, you dig? Sunroof, stereo, radio, radio, sunroof, stereo, radio, black leather bucket seats sit low. You know the body's cool, but the tires are worn. Ride when the hard times come, ride when they're gone. In other words, the light was green. I could wake up in the morning without a warning and my world could change. Blink your eyes. All depends on the skin. All depends on the skin you're living in. Up to the window come the law with his hand on his gun. What's up? What's happening? I said, I guess that's when I really broke the law. He said a routine, step out the car. A routine, assume the position. Put your hands up in the air. You know the routine like you just don't care. License and registration. Deep was the night in the light, and deep and deep was the night in the light from the North Star on the car door. I could see deja vu. We've been through this before. Why did you stop me? Somebody, body, 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 body had to stop you. I watch the news. You always lose. This is serious. You could be dangerous. I could wake up in the morning without a warning, and my world could change. Blink your eyes. All depends on the skin. All depends on the skin you're living in. All depends on the skin. All depends on the skin you're living in. That's an excerpt.
That's great. That's really, see, I really like your writing and the way you recite. Should we use the word recite? That sounds,
well, you know, the word we came up with was oralize.
Oralize.
Yeah.
No, where do you do your poems? What kinds of settings?
Weddings and clubs. Concert halls, unions, you know, labor gatherings, et cetera, and funerals, family reunions.
The poem you just did, was that based on a personal experience?
Many personal experiences. I mean, and it's interesting when I said that part of the idea of the poem being a tribute to some of my students who were interested in hip hop was because of the hip hop influence, but also because of the experience that black males, and particularly young black males, have with the police. So this idea of being stopped by the police, constantly questioned by the police, unwarranted interrogation by the police, et cetera, yeah, that's a personal experience that I've had, but one that's widely shared in the black community.
In those times when you've been stopped by a cop, mm-hmm. have you tried to use language to explain yourself or, to just help, like, get his respect, the cop's respect?
Yeah, but, you know, at that point, language sort of breaks down.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm speaking the language of the innocent, you know, but I've already been judged guilty, you know. So there's a breakdown there. And it's no longer about language. It's about power.
In Mystery of Love, you say the truth cannot be told by the battles you win or lose, but by the stories we believe in.
Mm.
You believe that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the battles tell one aspect of the truth, you know, maybe in a more factual kind of way. But I think once we understand what kinds of belief systems and values people carry around, you know, we get to a more central kind of truth.
So were there certain stories you grew up on, like either family stories or stories about the neighborhood or?
Yeah, I mean, stories I grew up on, but as you say that right now, there's another story that I'm much more interested in that I'd really like to tell you.
Yeah, please.
My family just started having family reunions in the last 4 or 5 years, and both sides of my family are based in South Carolina. And so I went to a family reunion in Charleston, South Carolina. My mother, who lives there, lives about 70 miles inland from Charleston. So this was the day of the family banquet. So we were all gathered, you know, and the food was there, et cetera. And I was asked to speak and to do a poem at the family reunion, you know. And I was supposed to talk about the importance of family. That was my assignment, you know. And so, I went to pick my mother up, and we're all in the car, my mother, her sister, a couple of kids, and we're driving back to Charleston for the banquet. And we just happened to be riding in two-lane highway, and my mother and her sister kind of joking, talking about the family, and said, well, you know, you never know who's related to who, because from here right out to the coast, out to Charleston, were all these plantations, and they often sold, you know, slaves from one plantation to the other. So, and kind of laughing and saying, you know, we might have cousins stretching from here straight out to, you know, out to Charleston, you know. And then they mentioned somebody named John, Papa John, who I never heard of before, you know. This turns out to be my great-grandfather. And they were really talking about him, saying that he may have had children wherever he went. And I said, well, why did he, you know, go so many places? They said they kept selling him because he was a rebellious slave. And so they would sell him from one, you know, one plantation to another. And I asked what happened to him. And they said that he was lynched, you know. And then they said, well, my mother and my sister telling me this, and her sister telling me this story. My mother says he was lynched. And then her sister says, yeah. And when they lynched him, they asked him if he wanted to say anything before they lynched him. And my mother started laughing, and she said, yeah. He said, hand me my mirror so I can see my hair, right, to make sure he looked good, you know. This was an amazing story, you know, and that they had this story all these years, you know. And apparently what happened is they lynched him. They knew the area. They grew up right down the road from where he was lynched, and they said that as children, little girls, they would be afraid to be down the road when sundown came because they thought the ghost of Papa John would come up to get them. Well, what happened is they lynched him and did a poor job. I didn't know you could do a poor job in a lynching. Did a poor job, apparently, and left him for dead. He wasn't dead. He made his way back to the black community, and some people turned him in, and they came back and finished the job. You know, and the choice there was, that was really a sacrifice, because the choice was, well, you know, either that or they come, you know, the Klan come, they come back, and no telling what happens then. You know, everybody begins to pay the price for that. So that was really a sacrifice, just to give an idea of what the raw terror was, you know, at that time. And so I had this story, you know, this, and that they knew since they were little girls, and these women are now in their 70s, you know. And what happened is the occasion of the family reunion allowed this story to surface. So when we got to the family reunion, it was my turn to talk, you know. And I told you I'd be interested in this rites of passage stuff. And there were all these young people in the family I'd never seen before, you know. I said, well, you know, I have a new hero. I discovered a hero on my way to the banquet. And I told this story about Papa John, you know. And several of the younger kids came up later and asked me all sorts of questions about it, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know where that's going, but somehow or another, not only is it a personal family story, but it has all these mythic possibilities to me.
Did you say to your mother, how come you never told me this?
I did,
before?
Yeah, I did. And they, it just somehow or another, it just never occurred to them, you know, that this story would be so valuable, you know. And even then, they weren't really telling it because they figured I needed to know. It just happened to surface. The other thing I recognize about aging and maturing and getting older is, you know, they say that every story has its time to be told. And what I realize now is dealing with my mother and her peers, you know, is you don't have to ask them almost for these stories. If you're just around them, they start to surface. It's almost as if they want to give these stories up. They want to pass them on. I get kind of mystical about it. You know, there's something inside just saying that now it's time to tell this story. So it wasn't only that story since then. It's been many, many other stories that as a young boy, I just never heard, you know, but are very valuable.
My guest is poet Sekou Sundiata. His new music theater piece, Mystery of Love, opens tomorrow night at the American Music Theater Festival in Philadelphia. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Back with poet Sekou Sundiata. You had a previous music theater poetry piece, mm-hmm. called The Circle Unbroken is a Hard Bop.
Right.
And I believe that was set in the 60s or 70s and was about three... radical African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a period that you were very politically active in yourself?
Oh yeah, no question. That piece is set in the present, but reflects on that on the late 60s and 1970s.
Mm-hmm. You have a character in The Circle Unbroken is a Hard Bop called Space.
Space.
And this is somebody who's kind of broken down during that period. Why don't you describe his character a little bit?
Well, one of the things that happened during that period of time when the movement was really decimated, the way the movement ended, decimated internally and externally, principally externally by, I think, the government through the COINTELPRO program, people were really traumatized. I mean, in much the same way that people were traumatized from being in battle, from being in combat, from being at war. So there was really post-movement trauma, a great deal of it. I think that still exists to this day. And Spaces is that kind of person. He's been traumatized, and yeah, he has broken down in a number of different ways, and he rants, you know. But there is a truth at the core of his rant. It's almost like when I hear people in the street ranting, I have two reactions. One is an aversion, I turn away. And the other thing is I kind of listen in at the same time, you know, because something is driving all of that, and Space is that kind of character.
Would you do a little bit of Space for us?
Yeah, as best as I can pull it together. Two times peace. From whence we come, that dark woman of a land only knows so well. How we tribalize our rest in the West, who could tell? Was once an exile knocked over across the bear, like a flatted fifth note of blue, you hear the terrible one we wear like a skin color. Mystery come down once again, crucified a suffer for us to see. Say X shall be your name till you raise it and praise it. The free you seek before you everywhere like air. In the beginning, 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 black and shining was our X. See, you got the circle of the mind, and you got the circle of the blood, and you got the pie and the square root, but that's not the bop. Now the circle of the blood, that's what we come here with. Tobacco Road, Kunta Kinte, Africa, Mombasa, stuff like that. You can separate yourself in the circle of the blood, but you come out something that strains what the philosophy call alienation, because blood is the transportation system for demon and oxygen and goddesses to get to your brain. Never else and never less. You can separate yourself from the circle, but that's another bop. Now the circle of the mind, that's what we was after. Elevation of principle over pigmentation. Content of the character, not what's on the head, but what's in the head approach. To the predicament, beginning with what's in the name, ain't no rose, this I know. You mean to say a colored negroistic negro is still a negro, still a rose, a rose, a rose, a rose, by any other name smells the same? I don't think so. Call me money, call me blood, call me B, call me the 7-11 in the alphabet G, griot on the spot. So then Nat Turner told me, do the tighten up. And Marilyn Monroe was butt naked on Charlie Parker's bedroom.
Wow.
Oh, God.
So what did you pattern that on when you were writing it?
So much. So much history, fact, and fiction.
But what, you know, I'm talking about
the style of it?
The style of
it. Oh, that's really a tribute to these saxophone players that I loved and I kind of grew up on. I guess mainly John Coltrane and Pharoah Sanders. I did the piece sort of just dredging up from memory, but in full performance, there are a lot of honks and squeals and slurred vowels and syllables that really, I think of it as paying homage to those horn players, those soloists.
Can I get you to close with another poem?
Oh, another poem. There's a poem that we recorded on the first record we made called The Sound of the Memory of Many Living People, which I dedicated to a friend of mine, poet, wonderful poet by the name of June Jordan. So let me see. I never went to hear John Coltrane because I thought you had to belong to something. Sunlight, sidewalk, crack, crack, crack. They were like two waters, swishing, gurgling, two winds sighing through a wooden flute. Their eyes were closed. Fish smells, burnt hair, ashy faces, shiny hands, band-aids, ribbons. You can fly to the edge of the sea, and the fishermen will eat your wings with French fries and Coca-Cola on the side. Everything in the dream is the dreamer. The year the Mississippi River just sat like a hard promise, choking on vessels of commerce stuck on the whim of the hawk who sought no favor nor gave none, like a widow of winter. And the Boy Scouts found four crack-faced cattlemen bent over a cross in a Bible. She offered her eyes, searching across their habits, recoiling sharply the gift was not free to give. He was thinking about the secret of life. This woman, who smelled like carnation milk, dropped to the floor when the senior choir sang hot cone grease, melted chicken neck sopranos reaching velvet claws to heaven. You could see where she was dark in the middle. She cried, oh yes, oh yes. Their eyes were closed. Last night, I had a dream with peaches, and I woke up stuck to myself. I am nobody. You wouldn't use that word if you knew what it meant. It ain't pretty. It's bloody. It overturns things. It overturns things. I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But when you smell the shoe polish on your breath, the sun goes down even, Stephen. Pow, 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 pow. This is the voice of reason. All that I see, I do not see. All that I know, I do not know. The eagle is the center of the universe, and I am but a speck in the spectrum, and changes for hands greater than my own. Pow, pow, pow. The first picture I saw of Charlie Parker was a melted bird on a naked branch with busted wings in Abyssinia Baptist Church. And if it was a secret, we couldn't even keep it. Swish, swish, swish.
Was there an occasion you wrote that for?
Oh. No, not a particular occasion. I was really actually working on some of the same things we were talking about at the time. I was trying to find these images and experiences that I thought were like deeply embedded in the consciousness, in that case, particularly of African-American people. For example, there's a point, three things in the poem where it says, one voice says, I am nobody, and then the response is, you wouldn't use that word if you knew what it meant. It's bloody. It overturns things. It overturns things. That's really a paraphrasing of Malcolm X. People at the time used to say revolution, and he used to caution them. He'd say, you wouldn't use that word if you knew what it meant. And then Martin Luther King, who said, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But, you know, there are other things that are more important, you know. And then a revolutionary activist at the time by the name of H.R.A.P. Brown used to say that, you know, people won't move to change their condition until they smell the shoe polish on their breath, knowing how far things had gotten at that point. So there were all those kinds of references in the poem, and I was just trying to, you know, the sound of the memory of many living people, just trying to document those images.
I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Sekou Sundiata's new piece, The Mystery of Love, is receiving its world premiere this week at the American Music Theater Festival in Philadelphia. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.